I'm Laura Jacobson. I'm from the New York City Department of Health. I run a data system similar to the one that Adam and Tracy described, where 700 primary care practices share their information with us, and we work with them on quality improvement as well. So I relate to a lot of the experiences that you guys shared. But right now I'm going to take a page out of Paul's book and talk. Sorry, I think that's going forward automatically. I'm going to take a page out of Paul's book and talk about anticipating problems and collaborating and figuring out, can we use EHR data for surveillance of chronic disease, and what are the big challenges in trying to do that? I have no relationships to disclose. I'm going to tell you first about our work at the City Health Department and the context for that. Then I'm going to talk about challenges and opportunities in EHR-based chronic disease surveillance that we came up with a group from a symposium that we hosted last year, and then talk about the community of practice that has evolved out of that. So this slide is probably very familiar to many of you if you're in this field, but I think it bears remembering that 10 years ago, probably even 5 years ago, this wasn't a field, and doing surveillance using EHR data was not really an option because, you know, we were at 20% coverage of providers. This is my picture is worth a thousand words slide. This reminds me that our capacity to extract information on patients and on population health has expanded dramatically now that we have it in electronic form. So one way to frame this conversation is in this expanding area of funding and focus, the bridge between population health and healthcare. So this intersection is large and it's really growing. And population health surveillance can be a key bridge here. We can use population health surveillance healthcare to get healthcare data and use it to inform public health, and we can send it back the other way to help with healthcare and improve population health. So using syndromic surveillance through hospital and outpatient and claims data has actually been going on for many, many years. But it's quite new to use this type of data to monitor chronic disease, risk factor prevalence, treatment, control, and to do it in real time. And this is expanding across the country simultaneously. So as more governments, NGOs, and health systems get involved in this work, there's a lot of lessons that we can share and challenges that we can tackle together. So at the New York City Department of Health, our response to this was to initiate what we call the New York City Macroscope Project. And the goals of that are twofold. The first is to develop and validate a system to using data from primary care EHRs for population health surveillance. So I'm not getting into that now, but I've listed a session where you can hear more about that if you're interested. And the second goal is to exchange the knowledge that we generate with other jurisdictions, to develop a network of people that are working on this topic and establish a community of practice. So I'll get into those challenges and opportunities that we discussed. So a little bit before APHA last year, we hosted a one-day symposium with 33 practitioners already engaged in this field using EHR data for chronic disease surveillance. And we looked at common opportunities for public health, and we looked at common threats that could really prevent us from unlocking the full power of all the data that we're slurping in constantly. And we asked participants at the end of the day to also evaluate and rank the top priorities for the field. The organizations, all of whom we're very grateful to for participating, included local health departments, federal agencies. ONC is the Office of the National Coordinator, which is the Federal Health IT Office, clinical data research networks, a number of academic institutions. CUNY is one of our partners in the New York City Macroscope. Foundations that are active in this area, a couple of health IT extension centers, and some healthcare delivery networks. Do we have anyone in the room who's from these organizations? And were you at the meeting last fall? All right, well, great, we're glad to have you here and have your input. So these are the priorities that the participants articulated. So topping the list was sustainability, and I'll get into each of these in a little bit more depth. Next was data quality, which we've heard a little bit about today from Adam. And then if we collapse the engagement, the buy-in, and governance, and the relationship management category, that's the next biggest question or priority that people had. So regarding the buy-in and governance piece, this is critical. We've heard, as I said, a little bit from my fellow presenters, the field needs peer-to-peer champions to discuss various issues like transparency and trust. Public health can act as an honest broker among competing institutions, getting collaborators together. Getting healthcare data for population health requires demonstrating value. One participant said, people are very nervous about integrating data. People see breaches in terms of their financial information, you know, Home Depot breaching their credit card info, and they're really very skeptical that we can do this in a de-identified way. So that's something we need to think carefully about. Directly tied to that is the topic of sustainability. So we need to think about the stakeholders in these data systems, the patients whose data it is, the providers who are holding that data, the funders, the community groups who are engaged in this space. One participant said, there was a lot of enthusiasm in high-tech money. Now that's going away. Adam talked about this as well. If we're not providing value to the people that hold the data, we're not getting invited back through their door. Data quality. Some of the questions that we discussed in the symposium included, well, we don't necessarily need to solve the issue that we have an information bias, but if we can quantify it, that's going to be extremely helpful. Can EHR data ever represent the total population versus the healthcare-seeking population? What does missingness look like, and is it the same across systems? How evenly is it distributed by race and sex and age, by disease state, by insurance status? Are there some subgroups that we can do a better job monitoring? For example, we know women of reproductive age are much more likely to be coming in than men in the same age range. Maybe children we do a better job of covering. Are there sampling and weighting strategies that we can adapt to handle some of this bias? Can we collect it? Can we work across systems and codify it so that we have a way forward in working with this? One of the things we're doing in New York is using the CDC's guidelines for evaluating a surveillance system. And then, Paul gave some great examples of this, so I can jump through this, but other fields have been using big data for years. Let's learn the lessons that we can from them, you know, how Amazon does it, you know, storage, data aggregation, analytics services, how can we expand those? And something that came up again and again was the question of fit for purpose, meaning EHR data can't do everything, but just because it can't do everything doesn't mean it can't do anything or that we should dismiss it. All data that we use in public health has some sort of bias, has some sort of problem. So one participant said, I don't need to know whether the obesity rate in Harvey, Illinois is 72% or 74%. I need to know what sections of the community we need to target so that we can do outreach to providers in those areas and do interventions. So maybe our point estimates are not amazing, but our geographic comparisons are extremely valid, or our trends over time are giving us a great indication of where we're moving. So when we ask people how they would want to participate moving forward, one of the things that came up was the participation in monthly sessions. So I'll talk about what evolved from that. Academy Health is a health services membership organization, and they're actually here. They're at the expo if you want to learn more about them. And they helped us develop population health community of practice with these four pillars of action: to share best practices and updates, to provide thought leadership for the field, to tackle shared challenges, the many of which I just walked through, and to seek formal funding opportunities together. So there's a monthly phone call, conference call. We share a call for papers for Academy Health's annual research meeting and their Public Health Systems and Services Research Interest Group annual meeting, the Electronic Data Methods Forum Symposium, the eGEMS Journal, which is Academy Health's peer-reviewed journal, stands for Generating Evidence and Methods, ad hoc work groups for white papers and proposal development, and this has been going on for about a year now, so it's pretty well established. Here are some of the early participants. It's expanded since then. Again, do we have any folks who are already part of this? All right, great. Well, we'll make sure to get you connected. So I'd like to thank, the conclusions we came to after this day was that EHR data is not going to come to us automatically. We have to be responsible, we have to foster trust, we have to build collaboration, and we have to offer something unique. We have to offer expertise that other fields are not offering. Maintaining a community of practice, we feel, is strongly necessary in order to share innovations and the lessons that we've learned. So I'd like to thank the large team that it takes to run this kind of system and think about these kinds of problems. And then just end with the contact information for Elizabeth Cole, who runs the Population Health Community of Practice at Academy Health, so that you can reach out to her, or you can reach out to me, or as I said, you can find Academy Health in the expo as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, everybody. It is now 9:45, so we have 15 minutes on the schedule for anybody who would like to ask any questions of our presenters, and I'm sure they're willing, ready, and able to entertain those questions. And in case this is a room full of shy people, I'm going to ask the first question so you all can warm up, and those of you at the back closer to the door can come up a little closer to the front. So it'll be a little, we won't have this many blank rows in the front. If any of the presenters, I know you've been talking, if any of the presenters have any insights or anything they'd like to share about what they learned from other presenters, just as a way to establish the themes we heard here and how they relate to each other's presentations, please feel free to do that while folks are running to the microphones or running to the front or scrambling, running all over each other to come and ask the questions. I don't see anybody moving.
So I think one of the things that really resonated with me was, Adam, what you had talked about with data quality. I think we have to realize, too, while we have the black hole, we also have a problem in that the quality of data, or even whether data is being collected in organizations. I mean, well, I'll just give you a silly example. In one of our analytics products that our clients absolutely love, it collects vital signs in the analytics tool. But I had a question last week and said, what if we don't collect it? It seems pretty straightforward. Can't really report on it. And then there are others where the data quality is so poor that, or the reliability or the confidence in the data is so poor. It's such a significant issue in terms of us really leveraging analytics and changing practice trends, changing all of the elements that we talked about throughout the presentation. So I think that I applaud you for, and I know that's part of research, and I know, Laura, you spoke about it as well. It's so vital that in organizations, as we prepare, that we actually start to clean up data and start to enforce data standards. You know, a lot of people looked at meaningful use stage two as being one of the most painful experiences of their lives. But the reality is that a lot of the data got standardized. You know, I could tell probably researchers were throwing parties as a result of some of that. You know, so realizing that some of the burdens aren't always necessarily going to be the real painful experiences. So, anyway.
Paul, you're a kind man. Thank you. The data quality work that we did with those 11 sites, we created provider scorecards, report cards, to show each physician in each practice where how they were doing in terms of data quality. So the administrators were kind enough to let me come in and have somewhat uncomfortable conversations about office flow and procedure, and really start to break down where things are working, where they're not. And it wasn't meant as punitive at all, but you know, really to applaud them for, you know, taking that next step to make things better. And that was about high blood pressure, but it doesn't matter what you're talking about. A system is a system. And Laura, what you said about breaking down the data into geographic relevance, incredibly important. So I did a terrible job with my last slide that had a couple maps up there, but that was the point. Our partners wanted to know how diabetes control was, not just by county, but by zip code, very specific things, with the idea in mind that the interventions, while they're happening only in one county, that county is quite diverse, part of it affluent, part of it not so much. So how they target those kids that are obese would differ based on where they're coming from, and they just needed to know where they're coming from. So I am amazed at how organized your group is and effective, and that's inspirational. So I want to scoop up as much of that as I can and take it back home. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I really do want to echo the whole issue about data quality. I think that that's certainly the biggest challenge that I face as well in the work that I do. I would say probably about 70 to 80% of my time is spent gathering data, cleaning it up, standardizing it, putting it all together in a common format of some kind so that I can even use it. So a lot of the areas that I've been concentrating on recently have been to ask the question, what can I do to shorten that curve and to increase data quality and make it more useful? And I think that's going to be a continuing challenge in the future. I would also say that data delivery systems is a big issue, because we're in the age of big data right now, and we just have massive amounts of data. And so finding the best ways to store that data and get it into a place where we can access it quickly is certainly a major issue.
Thank you, Scott. One question here, one there.
So I'm very interested in that the provider scorecard and how it led to differentiate the workflow. I was wondering if you, I apologize for the earlier presentation, but has that workflow discussion led to clinical decision support or changes or implementation?
That's a great question. So I don't know if everyone could hear, but your name? Sue. So Sue's asking about the provider report cards, and after having those discussions, were you asking what kinds of changes occurred, or
what kinds of clinical decision support tools that may have resulted?
Sure. So what we did for a while were ongoing report cards to show change. You know, over time, are the data being cleaned up in the EHR? Can you find patients by the right coding? You know, are they backing up and getting those diagnoses in there, which is important for billing even? I mean, we could associate that with some financial loss because diagnoses weren't being counted. So it's terrible for clinical care. It's horrible for getting reimbursed. So we did those report cards for a while. And eventually we did see those numbers start to shift back. But as far as like automated clinical decision support, there wasn't a lot automated about that process. It involved extracting data from the EHR, standardizing it in an external registry, pumping out reports from there monthly. So that was not something we could do within their EHR. The only thing we could do within that EHR was find patients that were already correctly diagnosed. So it wouldn't show the problem, it would obscure it. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. I have been working on Harvard Solution, right? And my chair, my department, I'm charging with trying to put together a database of all our deliveries. And I'm sorry, this is the first presentation, the black hole thing is perfect because, you know, we have not just one PMR, but there's like five, actually, to really get the complete picture of a antepartum, intrapartum, postpartum care episode. And I'm just trying to figure out how to go about doing that. I mean, I know that's a really important question, but, you know, again, I have five black holes, and how to put all five of those silo black holes together.
We all have a problem.
The second question is, just really quickly, what do you guys do about ICD-10? Because you're like, I'm probably doing that. But it seems like it is built more for data than mine, so.
So I think that if anybody had an answer that was conclusive and clear to your first question, they wouldn't be here. They would be actually probably own something that would be similar to what the Trump building is about here. So I think there, and again, I tend to oversimplify things, so hopefully one of my fellow presenters will rescue me. But I think that there's two answers in terms of how it's being pursued today. I would say the first one being that taking five EHRs and flattening the data into some standardized data format, and really you're talking about extracting data in a CSV file, flat file format, and basically putting it into some database or data warehouse. That's really kind of the methodology, and that allows the analytic tools to be able to kind of get at it in the same format. The kind of the holy grail is the idea that we can actually have enough standardized data in health information exchanges where the data itself has been standardized, but we're like a quantum amount of time away from that becoming a reality, and especially when you're talking about specialty care. I mean, if you think about the number of specialists in healthcare, it's staggering. So to the degree that, you know, OBGYN gets out in front of this and creates data standards that everyone agrees to, you know, that's almost is what it's going to take, and then it has to be incorporated into some data standards around HIEs, et cetera.
So I had a PCIQ question, really, as far as the, you know, you're talking about quality assurance from the gathering EHR data from 700 PPPs. Where does the burden of the data quality fall? Is it on you guys receiving those endless cash eliminated files, or is it on the PCP?
That's a great question. And tied to Sue's question earlier, I think, about workflow and who controls the data quality. So we also did, we also do report cards or dashboards for the providers. And they find that really helpful clinically because doctors are used to looking at the person in front of them and treating them to the best of their ability. And they're not used to thinking about, okay, of all of my asthmatic kids that came in the last year, how many actually got their flu vaccine? And doctors want to provide good care. That's why they're doing it, especially primary care providers. It's not the most lucrative specialty. So they can see the direct impact of the data that they are putting in on their ability to look at their patient panel and take better care of them. They get pretty engaged in that. And also when it has financial ramifications, as Adam talked about, you know, when you have all your codes in the right place, your billing claims are going to go through without, you know, coming back three times. And they're going to, you know, be paid more on time and more fully. So that's one way they've gotten engaged. We were able to move our report cards from a very documentation-based report card, which we did for about 3 years, until 2 years ago. Then we were able to move it to the data standards across our practices got high enough that we were able to move it to a quality improvement scorecard. And Sue, to your question, we did work a lot of work with CDSS alerts, and to generalize, they hated them. did not like the pop-ups, did not want to be told how to treat the patients and stuff. So it's not a magic bullet. We have to find a better way, you know, to maximize the EHR for that type of quality improvement. And that didn't seem to be the solution in our particular group of providers.
And there was a question that someone asked about IP10. Oh, they were the ones that say
that. Well, we all have to deal with it. And we put it off long enough, like 10 years or something compared to Europe, so it's probably time to bite the bullet. We have one clinician who helps me keep my spirits up when I'm like, our data is going to be so messy now, and it's going to be so hard to capture, and people are going to be entering the wrong thing, and somehow somebody allowed it so that there are a few codes that mean something different in ICD-9 and ICD-10, which I just don't understand how that ever happened. But her enthusiasm is like, but now we're going to know if it's on the left side or the right side of the body, and it's going to tell us which type of hypertension it is. It's the exact degree, and it's going to be so great, and we're going to have all this great and wonderful data. And I'm like, okay, so there are some upsides to this, and everyone's going to be struggling. But again, it is tied to billing, and in a, you know, within a year, that's all that's going to be accepted for billing. So we're hoping that providers will catch on pretty quick, and we're doing a lot of outreach and PowerPoint presentations about how ICD-10 works, and we have cheat sheets by specialty for here are your most commonly used codes and their ICD-10 equivalents, and the EHRs we work with all have pretty decent mapping that will hopefully translate the ICD-9 to the ICD-10. So it's a challenge, but we're all working through it together.
Fantastic. You two epis, my God. So yeah, your epis and your public health folks are, or you mentioned epi and clinical decision support or business intelligence, or whew, those are different people. So yeah. I would try for a mutual understanding between both. I don't know if they know where each other are coming from, but with epi, you have like an uber degree of standards, and if there's a blank cell, this data sucks, it's terrible, and I'm not using it, and so you have a very research-oriented crowd and a very applied crowd, and as much as possible, I think the only way to really get them on the same page is to help foster lots of uncomfortable, you know, communications between the two, where they start to talk about the end goal, and maybe their end goals are different, but at some point they should converge. So having a longer view in mind in what those two fields bring to the table. And they're very different, and they're hopefully complementary as opposed to competing in some way or contrary. So I don't know whose job it is to bring folks to the table, maybe yours, but congratulations, you get to do that. But that's a great question. And I would also find folks in your organization who see that issue too, who see that same concern, and build that up from the ground. Find a good partner who gets your concerns, who will go to meetings with you, who will be supportive, who can help pull that off, and just build your critical mass one person at a time.
Thank you, Adam. Adam has a lot to work with. If you want to stick around, but join me in hanging on. Thank you.